Welcome to the Connect You podcast, where we interview guests who have transformed their lives, whether in mind, body, health, or wealth. Connect You seeks to discover what drives people and makes them extraordinary. Brought to you by Lewis Jackson, who brings you exciting real-life stories, hot topics, and the truth.
Welcome back to the Connect You podcast. On today's episode, we have Shebs Mia from MPI Investments. So, Shebs, thank you very much for joining me and introduce yourself, please, mate.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, so my name's Shebs. I'm from Mia Plotting Investments Limited. We focus on land and property acquisition.
So, Shebs, always start in the same place. Always feel that it's best for the guests to know who I'm interviewing. And for anyone that doesn't know, I've known Shebs for a little while. We've done a bit of work together, but he's a very modest person, and his story, I feel everyone needs to know about him. So Shebs, let's take everyone back to the beginning. Where did it all start for you?
Depends how far you want to go back.
Very, very early stages.
All the way back. Okay, so first off, I would say I've not had an easy life at all. From like a very young age, the dad left at like age 13. I'd describe my family, so at the time living at the house was my mum, my dad obviously left, was in a council house, my brother at the time and my younger sister. By then one of us is already married off. She just lived in Chelmsford with her husband, but I'd say we was like on the poverty line. You know, it was extremely difficult. Obviously, dad's now gone off, so no money coming in from him. I didn't have like a normal childhood. You know, a lot of my mates would go, "Let's go to Chelmsford. Let's go. Let's go to the cinema." Oh, can't. I haven't really got any money, but he's making up an excuse, going, "I don't really fancy it." Because at the time, you know, I didn't want anyone to like sort of label me as like gippo or you know council house scum or whatever. It happens, doesn't it? But I just didn't want to be labelled at the time. So I just made an excuse saying, you know, didn't fancy it really. But from a very young age, I had to learn quickly how to get money, which, you know, I should be focusing on my GCSEs, you know. I shouldn't be focusing on money coming into the household. But, you know, I didn't have any money, so I had to quickly work out, you know, when I was in school, I was selling these Genie SIM cards. I'm not sure if you remember. You top up with £10 and you get 300 free texts. But before that, I used to work ad hoc basis for a computer company. They used to sell up PCs. Because I was shadowing them, looking at what they were doing, I quickly knew how to sort of build a computer. Not confidently, but I could work it out. So they were throwing out all this stuff. I said, "Can I have that? Can I have that? What are you doing with this? Can I have that?" And I've just put all the parts together, kind of like Iron Man. And I made a computer. They're throwing out a CD writer. I had that. So now I had this computer. I had a monitor anyway. I was one of the ones actually in my school who had broadband, so I could easily leverage that. And I sold these SIM cards. So I used to order them online for free, but people didn't know because I didn't have internet at home. But I had a broadband dial-up from, you know, this bunch of junk I made turned into a computer. So I had wads of these SIM cards, you know, selling like £20 each. So I saw an opportunity. There was obviously a demand there. I had the supply. I had in my blazer pocket just big wads of these SIM cards, £20, £20, £20. I quickly added up. And then a lot of people started getting into like music CDs. I said, "Well, look, I'll burn you a CD, £1 a track, right? Minimum 10 tracks." And again, it was just a money spinner. It was, but that's what I had to do. Friday, Saturday nights, I used to work at a Chinese takeaway, £35 a night, so £7 for the weekend. But that's what I had to do.
Is that because you're dad left and there wasn't the money or wasn't the income coming into the house?
I'd ask him for money, of course I would, you know. Even like, "I've had £20, Dad, you know, just this week so I can just see my friends," sort of thing. Oh, I haven't really got it. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But But how we ended up in a council house, we used to live in Heybridge, and I remember sitting there in the front room, and he come through the front door going, we now have to move. Didn't give any explanation why. But later on I learned that there was some sort of war going on with Saddam Hussein or something. He said about the interest rates increasing, what we're seeing now actually. Mm. And he just said he couldn't keep up with the payments. So he lost his properties, he lost his restaurants, and yeah, we moved into a council house, and that's been there ever since. But yeah, I mean, that was that. So all through school, I sort of hustled, if you like. You know, I was set to get good grades. Year 7 and 8, I was one of the brightest boys in the school. And, you know, with regards to, like, you know, physical activity, if you like, PE, one of the fastest ball runner in the school. Something not going to touch me. So, yeah, so there's been some achievements, but all through school, I started to lose interest after my dad left. And it's just felt like, look, he wasn't the best dad. I'll put it out there right now. But I just felt like as soon as he left, I had this sense of freedom. And with that sense of freedom, I didn't use it wisely. You know, I was out all the time with my friends. If I'm doing that, then I'm not focusing on my schoolwork, and grades quickly started to slip. So, and then after school, I also got expelled from school, by the way. Just this dodgy year photo, and which caused me to be expelled. And, you know, that was 3 months before my exams. And he said, look, you know, the teacher didn't want to see me again, just come back for your exams only. So I didn't do well. From 16 to 19, I went in and out of jobs, didn't really have a sense of direction, didn't really know what I was doing. And then one night I was out with my friends, and you know, I was seeing a girl at the time who was in a park, I was about 18 at the time. And so she went off now. There was a guy there causing a bit of grief with me. I was about to go over a pee, and he gave me a bit of grief. I didn't actually do it. So now we're walking down the same path, and my mates are there, and they see this confrontation. And you know, one of them started beating him up. So obviously I was there. I told him not to do it. I said no, don't do that, don't do that. And yeah, it just turned ugly very quickly. You know, the police got called, and everyone ran away. But the guy held me up against the fence, saying, you know, you're not going anywhere, sort of thing. So for that, I mean, still to this day, I'll still say, you know, I'm still innocent, you know. But, you know, the police and all that didn't see it like that. There was compelling evidence apparently against me, which was completely fabricated. So the justice system, I think, is a little bit broken. I think there's a lot of innocent people that go away who can't, you know, prove their innocence, you know. So, but as well, doubling up, you know, your close mates at the time who are supposed to help you didn't help you, which actually caused me, I got sentenced 9 months, done 4.5. And that was back in, like I say, like 2005, I think. So that was a real turning point in my life. I knew I had to change my life. I knew my prospects on the outside wouldn't be great because I've got this record now. So I asked for, one of the guards for a prospectus, Plymouth University. So I know I wanted to get back into education. I wanted to fix my life because enough is enough. You sort of come to a turning point, and I'm kind of glad it happened to me, but not in the way it did, if that made sense. So I done my sentence, come out. My mum wasn't pleased about me going away because it was just going to be, by then my brother's married now as well, and you know, it's just going to be my little sister, my mum at home. So I had that stress as well, and that sort of potentially holding me back to brighten my future. And I think a lot of people have these sort of challenges, and I think you just need to do what you feel is best at the time. And that's exactly what I did. I moved away done an access course into humanities, which is like a combination of studies which gets you ready for university. So I done it in Cornwall. I could have done it in Chelmsford, but I felt like there was going to be far too many distractions from the same people who put me away in the first place, sort of thing. Well, I thought, if I'm going to do this, I need to do it properly. So I moved away and smashed that access course. Come back up to London for I studied business finance. Studied business finance, finished that. And then I ultimately wanted to be a stockbroker or a trader. That didn't happen. After several attempts of ringing these companies and saying, look, I'll work for free, that actually didn't happen. So I fell into retail. After all that hard work, I fell into retail, but I needed money. At the time, that's all I sort of knew what to do. It's just, you know, I've got a bit of sales experience. I can get that job. I had one phone interview, face-to-face, and he just gave me the job straight away. So I stayed there for 2 years. And then one of my mates said, look, you know, if you want a different opportunity, why don't you come do recruitment up in the city? I said, well, look, if you can get me in front of someone, yeah, I'll definitely do that. That happened, got the job. And then I stayed in recruitment for, you know, 5.5 years. But then, you know, when I was sitting at my desk, it's all good at the very start, but then long hours, I've now got a family, now got a wife, coming back on a train, not seeing them. I work locally as well, and it's the same sort of situation where you're still working long hours. By the time, you know, well, left work, went to the gym, I was coming home, and, you know, they're in bed, you know, so it's just like, this is not right, you know, something must change. I knew sitting there at my desk, and I know it's going to sound silly, but I knew I was meant for more. I didn't know what it was, but it's just this urge, I guess, inside, kind of like a calling. I'm meant for something else. I'm meant for more. And that's when I've always wanted to be in property, you know, I've always wanted to be in property, and that's where it all began. I went on one of these seminars, and I remember going there with my wife, and I said, you know, it's not going to affect, you know, our work schedule. It's on a Saturday, let's go. Went and come out roaring like a lion. I was thinking, like, this is possible. Why isn't everyone doing this sort of thing, you know? So, and I guess like the rest is sort of history, you know? So went there, had a fantastic time. And that sort of opened the floodgates, if you like, to information. I started quickly immersing myself into like podcasts and, you know, YouTube videos, books, networking events, just throwing myself at it. But obviously I was still working at the time, so I could only do like weekends, if you like, or, you know, late evenings. So that was a bit of a challenge as well with the limited time I had available. But I did the best I could. You know, I set up my service accommodation business by sacrificing my lunch breaks. So the night before, I used to have a list on Rightmove. So all the properties that I was going to ring on my lunch break, just save them. Yeah, that's my favourites. The next day, as soon as lunch break was there, sit in my car, ring his agents. And if I could get a view in, I'd quickly go up there and do it and come back and just make up some excuse. Sorry, something happened. You know, you're 2 minutes late for your lunch break. Really sorry, you know. But I did what I had to do, you know, because I wanted to get out of there and get some time back so I could build. Ultimately, you know, what I want to do is charity work, you know, because let me touch on it before, you know, there is going to be some point, and I truly believe so, that, you know, I am going to be wealthy, and there's going to be a point where I've got everything in my life, everything that I possibly want, and that's a point that I want to give back. Now, I've said this even at university, remember, like, sort of like the last lesson, if you like, and they're saying, what's everyone going to do then? What are you doing with your lives? And I echoed the same thing, you know, because, you know, without being too morbid, you know, you take nothing with you. You know, all your money, all your properties, your businesses, they all stay here. You know, you take nothing with you. So if you can use that money, use property as a vehicle to better your life, give you more choices, more freedom to a certain extent. And, you know, they use that as a vehicle and then help others in the process. I think that's a great feeling, I think, because that's forever lasting. You know, if you could build a school, for example, where in a deprived country, you know, that building will be there long after you die, you know, and educating hundreds of people each and every year. You know, I think that's important. If you can put in a water pump in a place where there's no water, plenty of them, to sustain life in that particular village, in, you know, any of these countries, I think that's the biggest fulfillment for me. You know, the money's great. You know, it's okay, but the money always stays with you. Those physical things, schools, pumps, houses, for these people, these deprived people, in these places, that's the biggest fulfillment for me, I think.
Mate, that's some explanation. Yeah. Honestly, that you've what a journey.
Yeah.
What a journey. And for anyone listening, I hope you can resonate, and I'm sure there will be people that can resonate with that story. Certainly some parts of it, if not all.
Yeah.
But we're gonna have to go back through it and sort of chunk down certain parts of that.
Absolutely.
Because obviously you've been away for a crime that you didn't commit.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the early stage of your life with your parents, your dad leaving you.
Yeah.
Then you've had to work. You've actually earned your way through your whole life,
mm-hmm.
Find money for yourself, and then you've come out and you turned your life around. You've created yourself a family, and you've built wealth off at the back end of it. So your relationship with your parents,
mm-hmm.
how is that now? And obviously your family as well, because you've got brothers and sisters.
Yeah. Interesting, actually, because relationship with parents, not great. I always felt the odd one out within my family because I had different ideas, because I didn't want to do different things. I think the best advice from my dad was get married, get a council house and have kids, or have kids and get a council house, in that sort of order.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't want to do that, to be honest. My brother fell in the trap of doing that, and I was just like, I don't want that. And because I had different ideas, I didn't conform to
the norm. Why didn't you want that?
Because I want bigger things. You know, you're not helping anyone by doing that. What you're doing, you're actually draining the system. Draining's a bit of a harsh word. You're not using the system correctly. Because you know, I believe if you go into that system, use it as a stepping stone to perhaps maybe get out and do something bigger. Not a lot of people want to do that. So, you know, from young age to you know, in my teens, you know, I saw my dad abuse my mum, just like hitting her constantly at the most silly things. And that's with me for the rest of my life now. I can't erase that, wish I could. So that's one of the reasons as well he left. My mum obviously kicked him out right at the end. And, you know, he's obviously remarried, so I presume he's happier. But yeah, even with my mum, because I don't conform to her ideas, to her ideology of what you should do when you're growing up, I was frowned upon for leaving the house and going back into education, because you should be at the house and, you know, provide for us, sort of thing. And how can I provide if I can't get a job and I've got this record now? And she had to say, well, that's your fault. And she still to this day thinks, well, you was there, so you was involved, so that is your fault. Well, actually, that's not the case. No matter how many times you sort of tell her and say, yes, I was there, but the charges which were against me was not me, it was this man, who actually lived opposite me in my street. But he didn't come forward because he was too scared to go to prison. And I quickly learned, you know, people, you know, are selfish. So well, I need to be selfish then as well, you know, because if I need to get what I need to do, then I need to be selfish. I know what I need to do. I need to go and do it. And if I didn't do it, I don't know what my life would be like right now. You know, if I just come out and still hung around with the same friends, and what would my life be like right now? You just don't know. So I think, you know, if some things in life are supposed to shape us for the better, and some people don't see opportunity when it hits them in the face, right? So, yeah, that still to this day, my relationship with my mum isn't great. We don't tend to talk anymore. She doesn't call. But you know, they keep my family keep a lot of secrets from me. She's happy to tell, like, my brother, and you know, my sister's stuff. And that's silly little things, but you know, I don't see the need to sort of, you know, hide things or, you know, say, oh, it's not my place to say when everyone else knows, you know. So it's just like, well, choose, is it your place to say and don't tell anyone or not? Because and you know, I just got fed up with that, to be honest. And we've always had a rocky relationship with plenty of arguments. So
witnessing what you see when you've grown up, mm-hmm. There'd be a lot of parents, I would imagine, going through rocky times, hard times, as we're in now, mm-hmm. Financially.
Yes.
If not, there certainly will be, mm-hmm. or they've previously gone through it, obviously with the pandemic,
yeah.
Financial stress or other stresses in their life. I'm not condoning what your dad's done.
No.
Not for one minute.
No.
But recognising that what you've seen as a child, how has that impacted you? Because there could be other people, parents now, that are arguing, let's say, and yeah. If they've got young children, how has that impacted you? What would your advice be to them? Because you could obviously offer some advice.
Yeah, I mean, let's go with how it's impacted me. Without even knowing about it, I didn't recognise it at the time, but I suffered with really bad anxiety.
Okay.
And I didn't know, I didn't recognise it because I've never had it have it happen to me. And I had to go to the doctors, and I didn't even tell him anything. You know, I went in there, and I was about to tell him, and he picked it up straight away. So I'm obviously giving off these signs or signals what he's brought up straight away. So I went to him about my headaches, got really bad headaches, and he said, "Can I just ask you something?" I said, "Of course you can." He said, "How long have you had anxiety for?" I was like, "I didn't know I did." I said, and then I wanted to sort of probe him, bombarding him questions.
I'm not laughing at your story, no. Said it.
But I just didn't realise at the time, and I must have been giving off these signals or something, or doing something without even realising. And I think maybe perhaps because of my childhood, and a bunch of other things as well, you know. Yes.
Do you feel like you've dealt with it?
It's a lot better than it is now, than it was then, sorry. It's a lot better now than it was then. It sometimes creeps back in. But, yeah, I think because of... Since 2019, when I went to that seminar, and I talk a lot about mindset, and I think that's really helped me look at things in a different way. How to deal with certain situations, how you react to them as well, and how you could possibly take yourself out of a situation so it doesn't flare up as much, you know. So my kids are an absolute nightmare, as you probably well know, and a lot of stress, and couple that in with, you know, hardly any sleep, you know, you've got business stress as well, you know, you've got to keep the missus happy, of course, you know, and you've got to be that glue still for your whole family, and that's a lot of weight for a man to carry on his shoulders. But you know, I guess it does creep back in sometimes, but it's nowhere near as what it used to be before. You know, I remember when I was working for a company, and they went out for this meal, and I had to meet them there at 7 o'clock. I don't know why. I walked into the restaurant, they're all sat there, bang, anxiety. My hands shaking, like all my neck was started all getting all tight. And I was just thinking, what is going on here? And I knew it was anxiety. And I was like, why am I anxious? You know, I know these people, I've worked with these people for several years now. I don't know why. It just comes and goes. But it's a lot better now. I've not had any episodes like that for a long, long time. I guess I've dealt with it. If we were to put it into numbers, I'd say 90% of the time I've got it, you know.
We'll come on to your coping mechanisms in a minute. I think I know one of them. But do you feel there is an additional pressure to be the glue within your own now family unit because of what happened to you in the past with your dad?
Absolutely. I think I just want to be that dad to my children that my dad wasn't to me. You know, he made a lot of promises he couldn't keep. And in the end, like, you just lose trust, you know. And obviously, him, you know, doing that abuse to my mum, you just lose respect for the man, you know. So, but yeah, ultimately, I want to be that dad, what my dad wasn't to me, and more, you know. So obviously, I'm going through a journey in my life right now. And, you know, it's been great, has its challenges. I've been completely stressed out sometimes. You know, as many times I thought this is not worth it, I'm going to throw it all in. But the next day I sleep and I'm like, no, I'm good again. I'm good to go. So, yeah, I think there is that pressure on there. Of course it is. But also as well, the need to be successful is overwhelming.
Successful in business or as a dad?
Both. Because if I'm successful in business and I can teach my children about money, then they'll teach their children and so forth. And I think there's a lack of education in the system right now to finance money, and everything that's going on now. A lot of people say you need to save yourselves. I think that's true in a sense. You know, costs are always gone up. You know, obviously there's a sharp increase now with what's going on. But I've got an overwhelming sense of being successful because I feel like if I don't do that, I've let myself down, I've let my family down, and potentially all these people who I can help in these poorer countries. I think, you know, if I don't do that, then I've let them down as well, and that's what I think.
So, trust. You mentioned that a few times.
Mm-hmm.
I take it you find it hard to trust, given what happened to you with a prison situation.
Absolutely. So,
Elaborate more on what actually happened, if you can.
Yeah. So your closest friends at the time, who you grew up with and got to know as like kind of like your brothers, if you like. Mm. You see them every day. You know, you not secrets, but you say things what you probably wouldn't even tell your family, right? So these people are close to you and close to your heart. And what happened that night for them to not back my corner, if you like. Quickly realise that it's everyone's out for themselves, you know. You've got to be selfish, I think. And yeah, it was a difficult time, you know, because all that I thought when I was in that prison cell is, how could they have done this to me? You know, how could they have not told the truth? And had they told the truth, I wouldn't be sitting here today. And that's kept going over and over and over in my head. And so, how can I have done this? How can I have done this? You know. But times of time passed. Time's a good healer. And, you know, I just wanted to do stuff to him. Once things have come out, naturally. But those feelings quickly passed. But that from that point, I had trouble to trust people. And yeah, I mean, that's what happens. I mean, life experiences always shape us, but trust, I think, now comes with actions. Comes with, you can't just trust someone off the back of saying, like, you know, it comes over time. I think it comes over time from people's actions, and I think it's something what happens naturally, you know. If someone's constantly deceiving you, telling lies, and you can't trust them, or they've told you something, but you actually later found out it's not to be true, then obviously that's a big thing as well. They clearly can't be trusted, or they think it's a truth and it's clearly not the truth, and then they need work on themselves, you know. So I think trust comes with just over time, basically over time, where you've. With integrity, ultimately, you do what you say, and that's it.
And obviously, I'm going to get shot, and obviously pinned to the fence if I don't ask the question.
Sure.
what was it like, and how did you cope knowing, being in that cell, that you didn't commit the crime? What were your coping mechanisms inside that cell,
mm-hmm.
cold, knowing that the door was going to shut, knowing that you didn't actually commit that crime?
Yeah, it was 24 hours banned up. There's nothing I could do, you know? I just accepted it. And that's how I coped. I accepted that I wasn't going to be in the court again and try and vindicate myself, if you like.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that, you know? I just opened up old wounds. I just accepted it. I had to move on. And, you know, me being in education in prison, I used to do like weekly courses, that kept my mind from sort of wandering, if you like.
It's proven that you've always had a resilience about you from a young age, from when your dad left. You've then gone out, you've found your own way, you've earned the money. Yeah. And then obviously then when he was in the cell,
yeah.
you've gone and found the education that you needed to do to then progress and further your own life.
Yeah.
To then get your first job in retail, albeit.
yeah.
So then obviously you've come out of the prison. You've done your time, which yeah. ultimately shouldn't have been yours, but was, you've accepted that.
Exactly.
You've shown a huge amount of resilience there that not many people could. A lot of people do, but not a lot of people should. So you've come out of prison now. And you've gone into retail, you've got your job, and finally you get a job in recruitment.
Mm-hmm.
Then we hit the pandemic.
Yes.
Then you started to invest into property.
I invested in property actually back in 2019. It was just rent to rent. So right. my first deal was two apartments in Colchester. So to anyone who's listening, you can't do it. In a 9 to 5, I was in a 7 to 5, and I still done it, but I had to sacrifice a lot of time.
Yeah.
You know, like I mentioned before, my lunch breaks, I didn't, as soon as I went on this seminar, I wanted to make it work, so I sacrificed my lunch breaks. I did. I had to, because I wanted to get out, and it just wasn't going to work for me anymore, you know? The money was all right, don't get me wrong, but, you know, you can't be in a trap, essentially, not seeing your children, you know, you're coming home and they're asleep, and there's only so much you can. Some people, you know, they might think, oh, that's right, but for me personally, my family's everything, you know. So, and we only, time only moves forwards. You can't go, oh, I've got to jump in that time machine now and rewind and I'll change everything. No, that doesn't work. You just, you just got to make a choice and stick to it, even if you can't give 100% one day and you think 40%, you know, the next day, that's fine. At least it's something. What you shouldn't feel like, oh, I haven't hardly done anything, and be disheartened, and it then sort of veers you off course. Every day's not going to be the same. Some days you're going to be able to smash it, some days you're not, you know, and that's you've just got to accept that.
But now you're full-time into property, aren't you?
Yes, I am, yeah.
So what is it that you're doing full-time now, for anyone that's...
So, I'm currently sourcing land and property for clients. I will invest in as my own portfolio as well. So, for example, you know, if I've got clients that are looking for particular type of properties, we only particularly focus on properties which have you know, scope for further development, i.e., maybe another dwelling on the side or the back. So it is quite sort of like a niche, if you like, that a few people do know at the moment. So those particular type of properties are quite rare to find, but they are out there. You just got to keep looking. Also as well, sourcing land direct to vendor, where we can further develop, either build ourselves or trade onto a developer.
So, and well, what I want to ask, obviously you said about your kids,
yes.
being everything to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
As I think any... Again, this is my own opinion, it's not everyone's, is if you're involved in any type of business or property, I think that's the main reason why most people start. Is that the main reason why you started property?
I wanted to get into property for a long time, and it all started when I went to Cornwall and I was in a shared house.
Okay.
Yeah, I was in a shared house. looking back at it now, it was just a four-bed minimo, right? But you just, I must be making quite a lot of money out of this, you know, four different rents. And I went into a HMO as well in Chelmsford. That was also a four-bed. And I said to, it must have been a property manager at the time, but I said to him, who actually owns these properties? And he goes, oh, someone called Craig. And I said, can I meet him? He's like, well, look, if you drop this contract off to his office, you'll be able to meet him. So I did. And but it was an opportunity to ask him. So the interest has always been there. I knew what I wanted to do, but I just didn't know how. And the how, obviously, people monetize on, you know, to show you, to mentor you, to give you the information you need to get for you from point A to point B, I suppose. But I asked him, you know, he openly admitted, you know, I bought my own house 4 years ago. This was back in 2012 now. He said, I bought my own house 4 years ago. I've got about 25 properties around Chelmsford and four in Manchester. I was like, wow, you've done really well for yourself. He's got like a, at the time, it was a fairly new Porsche. And I was, yeah, I want a bit of that. I want a bit of that. You know, I just wanted the lifestyle as well. But also as well, because money gives you choices. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not one of these sort of like flashy guy. I don't like to flash it. If I had money, I wouldn't like to tell people I've got money, if that makes sense. I'll keep that on the low. But I like to buy a nice thing, but I wouldn't like to tell anyone, you know, what's your net worth or anything like that. I just wouldn't like to. I think that's quite private. I know some people do, but that wouldn't be for me.
I think you should make, because from what you've done, you've obviously come from nothing. Mm-hmm. And then worked your way up to becoming something in your own eyes. And I think each individual is different. Monetary value to me doesn't mean anything.
No.
It's what your opinion of yourself, mm-hmm. to be honest, that's what ultimately matters. And again, your coping mechanisms.
Yeah.
I know what mine are, is again the gym. So, I mean, what would yours be?
I train as well. I think out of everything, I think health is important. I think it often gets overlooked by people. I think people are, you know, they're busy being busy. And, you know, they've maybe perhaps got all this money now, but got high blood pressure or suffering from this or suffering from that. And, you know, if you're born with things, that's totally different. But I think if I was to order in priority, it would be health, then my family, and then my business.
Yeah.
And I put the reason, oh, you're crazy, your family should come first. Well, without my health,
you can't look after
them. I'm not going to be here, you know? So I think your health is the utmost priority. Mm. You know, even if you can go for a 30-minute walk, do it, you know? Even if it's raining, you know, if it rains, you're going to get dry later, you know, let's face it. It shouldn't be an excuse. It shouldn't be sort of like a stopping point for yourself. I mean, and that's 30 minutes. Just go for a walk. Just stretch those legs. Clear your mind. Health is really, really important. I've just remembered something as well. You touched on the pandemic. I used to work in the city for a little bit. Came back, worked locally just near Chelmsford, and then went back in the city. Started January 2020 for a new job. And I was there for 3 months. Because when March 2020, Boris closed all the schools. So I was recruiting for qualified teachers and support staff in East London. And he closed all the schools. So ultimately, I got a call. I remember the announcement being made on TV, and about 10 minutes later, I got a call from my boss. And he just said, I'm really sorry for having to do this, but I'm going to have to let you go. We're going to have to shake hands. And I said, look, that's fine. It's not a problem at all. I understand why you've done it. I'm not angry. I'm not upset. But look, thanks for giving me the opportunity, sort of thing. He goes, look, you've made this, you know, much better for me, because I was dreading to do this because I know you've got a family and a mortgage. But I wasn't panicking too much, because back in 2019, August, I set up my service accommodation business, and that was ticking over well whilst I was working as well. So I had a pot, if you like, and recurring income each and every month. So I was okay. But there's a lot of people out there who wasn't okay, you know, who were furloughed, and you know, God knows what else. But
that really saved your bacon.
If I didn't have my business, I would have been up
Shit Street. Yeah,
Shit Street. Yeah. I would have been. And like I said, I felt like I had a calling at the time. And the only reason I wanted to explore it before I even went to a seminar is because I wanted to get into it. And I think maybe all my searches on Google or something brought up something on my Instagram, which I then went to a seminar, but I'm glad I did.
Big up Liam Ryan.
Yeah. But I knew, sitting there at my desk, looking around at people, how unhappy they were with their lives, but not doing anything about it.
But it's proof that you are proof that you can.
You can. There's so many times that I've wanted to sort of throw in the towel, but, you know, like I say, I sleep on it. Next day, I'm absolutely fine, right? And you're going to have bad days. You're going to have good days. You're going to have days where you probably can only do an hour. You're going to have days where you probably do 10 hours. But it's about sort of understanding the environment that you're in at the minute. And I'm talking from working from home. It is tough sometimes. You know, I've got my kids always wanting to climb over me. Daddy's girl, daddy's boy. But it's hard. And, you know, I guess I wouldn't want to quit. I could have quit so many times, but that's not in me, because nothing comes from quitting. You only know that you didn't complete, you know? So going forwards is the only thing that matters to me, whether it's a 1% a day, whether it's 10% a day. Little increments is better than no increments at all, you know.
Absolutely.
So, and that's I ultimately believe that.
So, what's next for Shibs?
Next for me is building, I think. So, back in 2018, I bought my first house near Chelmsford. Done that as a refurb.
Mm-hmm.
Managed to complete that within sort of like 2.5 months. Ready to move in. From no experience whatsoever. Of course, I had people help me, but ultimately, I was liaising with Water Trades. And then in 2020, I'd done my first conversion, which is in Gravesend, converted a mid-terrace redundant property into two separate dwellings, a two-bed masonette and a one-bedroom basement flat. We added a double-story extension at the back.
Just so people know, you actually raised the money from someone else.
I raised money from someone else.
That's key.
Yeah, I raised money from someone else. I had a little bit for the refurb, and then I bridged the rest. So, you know, being completely honest, I'm going to be absolutely transparent. Things did go wrong. You know,
good.
Yeah, not from the start.
Not good that it went wrong, but you're being completely transparent.
Yeah, I think if you're going to get into, anyone who's listening to this right now, if you're going to get into property and you think things are not going to go wrong, I wouldn't even get into property, you know, because things will go wrong. You could have the best house, you rip the floorboards apart, and you know, the joist could be rotten, for example. You can't see that on a viewing, but you've got to have a contingency for it, right? But things will go wrong, whether it's minor, whether it's major, things will go wrong. They just do. They always do, because it's just the way it is, you know, and
you can never be 100% sure.
You can always prepare for the worst, hope for the best. I mean, that's the way it's put. But yeah, things did go wrong. You know, first 3 months were absolutely fine with the build. And then I started to notice things weren't being done within my time schedule, if you like. And I soon had to make a hard decision to replace them. So I did. I then myself jumped on boards, got my own trades and finished it. It took longer than it did. It was supposed to take 6 months, but it was also governed by the gas and electricity meters, which applied June 2021. Got told 4 weeks by E.ON, and December they arrived.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. But that was that's I think when gas prices started to creep up a little bit.
Yeah.
Everyone started to get busier.
Yeah.
And I was happy with 4 weeks, but 6 months, and you couldn't remortgage because without gas electricity meters, you don't have electricity and you don't have the gas. So it's classed as uninhabitable. It's not a habitable space.
No.
Without heating, hot water, and electricity.
And just sitting on a bridge.
anything on a bridge. Very stressful times. Again, when you're doing something like this, definitely have the right trades in place. Mm-hmm. How do you know the right trades? You just don't. You just don't. You could. I'd always recommend use people who you know and trust. And these people, these trades came to me as a recommendation. I would not recommend them at all. So yeah, I certainly would only use trades you know and trust, who can stick to time schedule, who are professional, and they understand your deadlines. That's ultimately how I'll do it next.
And obviously you touched on something about building schools. Is that the long-term plan for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I've always said to my wife, I said, look, I want to do charity work. And I said, I don't know what that looks like yet, but maybe schools, you know, in deprived countries, maybe water pumps where, you know, there's no water and these children are going 5 miles a day or whatever the case may be to just get water. So I don't know what it looks like just yet, but I know I want to do it. I know I want to change lives. And I've got the full support of my family for doing that. You know, so like I say, you don't take anything with you without being sort of morbid. You leave everything here. You know, there's no point leaving millions of pounds in a bank when you could potentially put that to good use. You know, if you've got all these properties, you've clearly got recurring income coming through each and every month. So that's what I want to do. That's what I want to do. And it's in my heart. I know it's the right thing to do. And I know I'm quite spiritual. I know I'm being pulled towards that direction, and I can't explain the pull. It's the same urge I've got when I'm sitting there at my desk, knowing I'm not better than this, but I need more than this. I need to be different. I've always wanted to be different. I don't like to be the same, and this is one of the reasons why, you know, I've touched on with my family. I've always had different ideas. And people don't like that.
No, they don't like different.
They don't like different. They want you to conform. And I've never wanted to conform. I wanted to do my own thing. And whatever that is, maybe that's why I've walked alone sometimes, you know. And it's just because, you know, I guess I am different. But we're all different. And that's what probably makes us unique, you know. And it's the most common thing. If we're all the same, it'd just be pretty boring. You know,
I agree, mate.
All support the same team, all support, all like the same meals, you know, so
definitely.
I think ultimately that's really what unites us, but is our differences.
So I've got one last question for you, mate. As you're sat here today, going through what you've gone through, if you could leave one last message to your kids and your family, what would it be?
To my kids, to my family, thank you for believing in me. Thank you for believing in me. Thank you for giving me support. Thank you for being in my corner when I was at my lowest time. That will never be forgotten. Just thank you for everything that you've done for me. But yeah, just, you know, I want to build a future for my children where they are educated, but also as well know about things what I didn't know. I think that's really important. And if that happened to me from a young age, maybe, you know, my grades wouldn't slip. Maybe I would have chose my friends a lot better. Mm. But I think like having a dad in your life is like kind of like a mentor, you know, but a good dad in your life. So they can, you know, steer this ship and point you in the right direction. And I know it sounds silly, but I think that's really important from a young age, because you're quite impressionist. Is that a word?
Yeah. No, you are right.
You're led to believe things quite quickly from a young age because you're so naive, because you don't know any better. Mm. You don't know if it's wrong, you don't know if it's right, you just take people's word for it. Mm. So if you've got a dad who can steer you in the right direction, I think that's really important. And I think, that's what I would say. You know, thanks to my family, and plenty more to come, you know, one day at a time. But anyone else who's listening to this, you know, whatever path you're on, it's not going to be easy. You know, you are going to have sleepless nights. You are going to think, what is this bloody really worth it? You know, those thoughts are going to come in, knock the monkey off your shoulder, carry on, even if it's a small bit, a small increment one day, because that's what you can manage, fine. That's okay. They're better than zero. You know, if you're doing 10% one day and 1% the previous day, well, at least you're like 9% up, right? So it's just thinking about it differently, thinking about it in a positive light, attracting positive energy. And that's ultimately what it's about. You know, you've got to realise every day is not going to be the same. And realising that is the most important thing. You know, you're only human, you can only do what you can within your capacity.
Shebs, I appreciate it. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
And guys, if you liked it, like, subscribe and press the bell notification icon.
Thank you.
I actually said it this time. I'm not impressed I said it. I knew he was going to laugh. Mate, appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, man.
Thank you for listening to the Connect You podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share this on your socials, tag me, and leave a review.